never forget the first moment when I walked into a cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Hello and welcome to the 66 Skanon Podcast.
Clickety click.
Happy Christmas.
And the Oscar goes to.
Yeah, this is our Christmas episode. The last one we'll record before Christmas. In a couple of weeks, Darren, what have you been watching?
Well, there's a little film coming out this week that I think some people may have heard of.
Sisters.
Yeah. So I went back and I watched the entire Tina Fey and Amy Poehler filmography, and it was beautiful.
Baby Mama is epic.
Massively underrated, actually. I think it's horribly underrated.
Initially, I thought it was a joke, yet this is still going.
You don't like Baby Mama, Jay?
I don't know what to say to that.
You don't like Amy Poehler and Tina Fey?
And Tina Fey together.
I do.
It's a great combination.
Who doesn't?
And plus, Tina Fey wrote Mean Girls, so, you know.
This is still going. I should point this out. Okay, yeah. Fine. I also watched the 6 Star Wars films.
All of them.
Well, we have had several weeks, Phil. Several weeks in inverted commas.
I watched episodes 1 to 3 on Sunday.
Yeah, so, Star Wars Day, wasn't it?
Yes, it was I call it Star Wars Day.
So why would you watch 1 to 3 on Star Wars Day?
Because I had watched 5 to 6 the previous, 4 to 6 the previous week.
Why would you just not watch
You were all crazy.
Again? Yeah.
Because my wife had never seen them. And
Why would you watch them?
And they were on Sky Movies and it started at 8:30 and so, yeah.
There's your Star Wars Day.
Exactly. So, yeah. And we were up with the little lads, so we watched.
And his first Star Wars impression is The Phantom Menace.
No, we watched five...
Oh, you watched them together the previous week. Okay, yeah. That's cool. Okay.
Okay, so then go on. Let's take them in order. 1 to 6.
Okay. Well, actually, what would you consider to be the ideal viewing order?
4 to 6.
Yeah, that's it.
And 4 to 6. 3 if you feel like it.
If you have to. Yeah. If you absolutely have to. Yeah, I find a lot of people leave off The Phantom Menace. Even if they're going back to do the prequels,
when Attack of the Clones is worse,
yeah, Attack of the Clones is the worst.
I would agree, actually.
As terrible as Phantom Menace is, at least it's not Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, 5-star review from Empire.
Although Empire magazine,
just to be clear,
which they got very narky about today on
Empire Online is a 3-star review.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's much more.
It was retconned.
Revised and ended. A digitally remastered Empire review.
To which Star Wars, the official Star Wars site, when doing a rundown of the reviews of Attack of the Clones, said that Empire's review was 4 because they aggregated the two.
Oh, that's quite hilarious. I love,
he really should not be let live that one down.
No, he shouldn't. And he's not. He got a lot of it today.
But
we'll talk about the review of certain things later.
Yeah, so I rewatched all 6 of them. I find, here's the thing, right? So the prequels are not good films by any stretch of the imagination, but I still find the reaction to them overblown somewhat.
As in the whole, George
Lucas
assaulted
my childhood. The whole
Star Wars thing does that, though. I think that's what I don't like about it.
Yeah.
It's a religious kind of fervor that comes along with I think. You get extremes in
every group.
Unless it's hundreds of thousands of people put down that they were Jedi on
but
their
that's a problem. And the problem is,
it is a problem
because you've got the Force Awakens at 100% on Rotten Tomatoes or whatever. Yeah. And somebody's going to put a 2-star review and get death threats for it at some point.
Armand White, we need you.
Armand White's pretty much already there, is he not? Who gave it? It's at 98 at the moment.
Somebody gave it a review, which we'll talk about later.
Niall is looking this up. We will stop him from issuing a death threat. We do. Yeah.
A fatwa.
No, well, I saw all those Star Wars films.
Seriously, like you joke, right?
I'm not joking.
You heard about the thing online.
That's not an issue.
You heard about the spoiler jihadi, which is a very insensitive name, by the way.
Yeah, it is.
Did you see the French embargo form?
No, what's
the French press embargo form said that anybody who spoiled, and this is for the press, anyone who spoiled the Phantom Menace, Force Awakens, was liable to be sued by Disney.
I'm guessing the profits of Disneyland Paris were down this year.
Well, they don't really have that much further down to go, Phil, to be fair.
Paris is not having the best time. But
it's not a good year.
Yes, I'm going to segue. Now you made it really awkward for me to segue back to the spoiler jihad. This is going to get edited.
Where's he going with this?
But the thing is, the vast majority of reviews that came out today, they all came out today, specifically avoided spoilers. I mean,
Donald Clark is not a fan of.
Which is very rare to see, even the Guardian, especially.
Bradshaw, who generally
three paragraph synopsis. Mm. I mean, here's the thing, right? And we'll probably talk about this.
And yours is much longer, so yours can't really avoid
But here's the thing, there are no, like,
What do you think is going
to
happen?
I'm about to say, like, without spoiling anything, there's very little spoil. There's some obvious spoilers in it, which anybody in their right mind would avoid completely.
Yeah.
But, like, describing the basic plot of it is not at all spoilery way, shape, or form. So I don't
understand. I thought it was already relatively known information.
And the high
as far as
that, well,
considering that most people in the months leading up to this have been going, oh, what, can we get any information at all? Any at all on Puerto Rico? And then suddenly,
new stories on one new photograph being tweeted at 1,000
Where's Luke?
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
My question.
Yeah.
Just before we go on, one of the negative reviews comes from Scott Mendelson.
Ah, okay. Ah. He's the one's going to be shot dead in the next week.
Oh, Forbes, yes.
Yeah. What did he give it?
I don't know.
Here's the thing. Somehow
Andrew O'Hara,
he gave it a 5 out of 10.
5 out of 10.
Jesus,
O'Hara,
let's get the pitchforks, people.
Ruben Safoya of Cinemalog and Roger Moore of Movie Nation.
These are the people you must now hate.
Careful, Phil.
But Devin Ferretti,
we don't want to issue death
is
threats.
Not very positive.
Please don't mention Devin Ferretti in this podcast, please.
No.
Ever. Please.
Ever.
We're going to have to scrub on the record, please. I feel dirty.
But
I
find the reaction to the prequels, to get back to the tangent.
Yeah. No, but you are correct. It is
overdrawn. And I mean, even not even like fandom reaction where it's, you know, like it ruined my childhood or it assaulted my childhood or whatever. Which, terrible, I hate that use of language.
But those three and Kingsman's Crystal Skull are the only ones really that's leveled at. I mean,
it should have been leveled at Jurassic World
or
Terminator
Genesis.
Yeah. It absolutely should have been.
But I mean, certain segments about the fandom, and I says this is why I'm curious to see what happens with Force Awakens over time, like the J.J. Abrams Star Trek films. Like, most people quite enjoy them. Most people casually who I know really, really enjoy them. But when you go online,
what hardcore Trekkers saw it as, you know,
an affront to
because basically you wrote, you know, William Shatner out of the continuity and stuff, so
there's issues. Yeah. I do like Star Trek, but I think there's issues with that.
Well, I would agree entirely, but I think the reaction it generates is extreme. But rewatching the prequels, I find them more interesting than that, which is plot wise they're terrible. Dialogue wise, I hate sand. It's coarse and it gets everywhere.
they say you've killed younglings.
Yeah, that's a great
sounds
way
like
to
you're killing a bloody
duck.
Somebody that doesn't like Star Wars, you just pull a line out of fire, like, that's interesting to me.
Yeah. It's a terrible
line. That one line as well.
In the memory.
But, like, that's it. Yeah, you have this horribly tragic thing where he's just massacred a bunch of children, and then you go, younglings. Like, try not laughing in the cinema and feeling really bad.
Anakin, you're breaking my heart.
And there is no defense for Jar Jar.
Ever.
Yeah. No. Or the Trade Federation.
Did anybody see that somebody retweeted the linked the original review, I think it was the Telegraph, I don't know who wrote it, of Phantom Menace, and said that Jar Jar will join the lovable ranks of characters such as Winnie the Pooh in literature. A very enthusiastic review.
I can say to that is, oh, bother.
Actually, there are no Sky movies run the channel where they're showing them all.
Yeah. Over and over.
I may watch them over Christmas if I have time.
But don't feel obliged.
Yeah,
I won't.
4 to 6 and 3 if you feel like it.
I've never seen Revenge of the Sith.
I've never seen 3. Thank you.
I've never seen either. I was so crushed with the other two, I couldn't watch it.
Phil mentioned he has an interesting favourite Star Wars film.
Yes, I must confess, and I'm sorry, I seem to be robbing your thunder here.
No, go ahead.
Because I rewatched Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi lately, because I'd never actually watched them all in one go. Like, you see them in bits and bobs and clips and whatever. So I finally watched them all, and okay, I'm not a Star Wars fan by any means. I think they're oddly written but strangely lovable blasts of fun, all of them, the original ones. But I have to say, my favorite is Return of the Jedi.
Why? What elevates it?
Because it's the most fun.
The last 30 minutes of Return of the Jedi are fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I would say that...
Even the sad, dead Ewok?
I didn't particularly like it, I have to say, but...
I thought it was okay.
It's been years.
I like it about as much as the other two, except I think it's a little more fun, the bargain. And all the grief that's leveled towards it, I think a lot of that would be cleared up if the Ewoks just didn't look so cute.
Well, that's the thing, they're toyetic. They were
merchandising.
Yeah, it was originally meant to be...
There's a fair point
there,
yeah.
And the thing that my wife, who saw them all for the very first time, described them as their minions.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, no, they had their own spin-off.
Yeah, so my wife refused to watch it. Yeah. So there we go.
Yeah. And animated TV show as well. There was an Ewoks animated TV show.
They are essentially
minions. No, that's true. It's fair point.
And for the record, my favorite character is easily C-3PO and R2-D2.
R2-D2 is the hero of the
entire.
I've actually no argument with that. That's fair.
Although he is, I was again rewatching the original trilogy. He also, it seems like a very abusive relationship between R2-D2 and C-3PO. Like there's the point where
he's getting safe words.
Yeah,
there's safe words in there.
There are no safe words for R2-D2. Beep beep. But there we go.
This is wrong. This is wrong.
But yeah, there's a bit where like he pushes
four beeps and a beep.
It means yes.
10101.
Oh my.
Okay.
So forth. But yeah.
Why are Kenneth Williams and George Takei in the Star Wars
universe? Oh, good lord.
Yeah, and I would argue Empire is the best. That's the most conventional.
From my memory, it's been a long time, I would say Empire as well, but as I said, if I rewatch them, I will chat.
I like them all more or less the same. Just as I say, if I had to pick one to rewatch right here now.
I kind of thought in terms of, like, they've no real cultural impact on me like they do for a lot of people. Same so. Here. I can kind of watch them relatively objectively and say, "No, this works. This doesn't." So yeah, there's not much in it. Relatively.
Yeah, I'm allergic to nostalgia, so it's just not for me.
Just say, on my childhood bed, I had a Return of the Jedi duvet. Right now in my house, there is a Lego Millennium Falcon. There is a Han Solo action figure sitting on top of my speakers, and there is Dr. Bunsen Honeydew and Beaker as R2-D2 and C-3PO beside my TV.
Peter Pan right here.
Yeah.
So, Star Wars...
Why were you looking up those negative reviews now?
Perfect excuse.
Yeah.
Star Wars is very, very close to my heart.
Yeah, yeah,
I don't know if I can be impartial about it.
I hear you, I'm in the age group that I should have, but it didn't look like it was a kid. Peter D.T., maybe I'm just a hard bastard.
I'd be more of a Star Trek fan, but I'm quite partial to it.
I was more of an original series Star Trek fan when I was a kid. There you go.
Sabotage.
Indeed.
To quote the song playing in the new trailer, Sabotage.
Oh, mother of God, the new trailer.
Simon Pegg wrote it, Simon Pegg's the devil's spawn. We move on.
Oh, you've really pegged the blame on him, eh?
You best believe it.
I recommend you check out his book.
Is this like I was supposed to check out Zombievers?
We'll get to Zombievers later.
Let me put this in context. I just gave the guys some Christmas gifts. I gave Jay a copy of the memoirs of Cloud Lansman, the director of Showa. There is no way.
A bit of light reading for Jay.
I think Nerd Do Well would definitely be right up Jay's alley.
As a culture, as a way to understand.
Oh, good God, stop.
There's no understanding.
Stop.
All right, so enough about that. We'll come back to Star Wars later. What about who's next?
Jason.
Yes, I'm not going to plug up the show with loads of stuff, but I have a couple of things I do want to mention. Mostly to admonish everybody else, really.
Okay.
Particularly on one film.
Is it Zombievers, Jay?
Right, you're ready for this, right? Because I don't know who's going to agree or disagree with me on this, or who's seen my reaction to it or not.
I think I know what's coming.
The Prestige. Oh, Christ.
What?
This is a dreadful film.
What?
Are you all on drugs?
No.
You all, I mean the internet. Whole people, everyone.
No. What?
Yeah,
it is not good.
Why? It's great.
Not great. It's not. Oh God! What's wrong with you all?
This is like the turn. Is it? This is.
It's hammy. It's
why is that
dull?
It's not dull.
Oh, it is. Oh God! The most ridiculous climax of a film I've seen.
But it's
so long.
It's ingenious.
It's Christopher Nolan ingenious. AKA don't look. It's crap. It's absolute crap.
Have you seen Now You See Me?
Yes.
No, I haven't.
Right.
There.
And
what? It
does not work that you can compare magic films and go, no, but this is better.
It's a whole
genre. It works as a film or it does not.
The Illusionist, yeah.
It is.
The Illusionist is okay.
Not good.
I would watch The Illusionist 4 times in a row before I watch The Prestige again.
Wow.
I had an absolute awful reaction to it.
I loved it.
So I
say.
That period when he was making...
Between the two Batmans.
No, I'm talking about The Illusionist. That film where where we were having films with de something ist thing, because we had The Soloist and The Illusionist, and they were both dreadful.
The Soloist one was Jamie Foxx and the
I loved it. Ah,
you're all crazy. No, it's not good.
It's fantastic film. Cinema's magic.
It's so bad.
Okay, right. Here we go.
It's
hold
so
on.
Bad on. That it's making me contemplate and reappraise the whole of Nolan's filmography. That's how bad it is. But we'll talk about that again.
Let's just point out, this is for one man's opinion, and three people at this table like it.
You were all crazy.
Earlier, we had a private discussion online about different films from 2012 and things that we liked, and Darren raised The Dark Knight Rises as one of the films from 2012 that we liked. So, we know that he is definitely in the Nolan camp.
I like Dark Knight Rises.
It's
I like
it not too. Good, though.
It's
a come on, will you?
Superhero.
And I like The Dark Knight a lot, and I like Batman Begins a lot. But for the love of Christ, has it's major problems. Issues. Major issues.
I don't deny it has some issues. But
it's utterly unlike any other blockbuster.
I don't know what to say to that, except I really want to move on from this conversation. Okay. So I don't have to talk about this for long.
I love Inception. I do. So.
Yeah.
Memento. Always Memento.
We know that. Goodness sake.
We'll move on. I need to get our own system. I feel better for it.
Did that work some magic
for you,
Jay?
I feel for you. You're still wrong, but I feel for you.
Thank
you.
We shall be talking about Prestige Pictures later. So.
Nice! Hey. See, I missed this.
That's good.
By the way, I did know it was reaction, and it was either the Landsman book or a copy of the novel of The Prestige. I was torn.
It couldn't have been any worse. Anyway.
I've read it. It's good.
It's Priest, isn't it? It's Christopher Priest?
No. Christopher Priest, that's
We move on. Gaspar Noé's Love.
I want to know what you hear about this.
I also watched this.
Oh.
So is there going to be a lot of love at the table?
No.
Okay. Not that kind of love, I hope.
I like it.
I think it's weak.
I don't think it is, actually. I think I could see why you would think that. I suspect I'll be in the minority. I didn't love it.
Gee, you in the minority, you'd have thought.
This is not top shelf. No way. No. I mean, I'm not for a second.
In a way.
Can he get through this any more puns? I doubt it.
It wasn't even a pun.
Well, it's coming now.
Damn it! I was going to ask if in 3D you could see if it looked like it was coming.
I didn't
right
see it in 3D,
you,
I actually missed the cinema. I ended up watching
it. It's going to be an orgy of puns this day.
I missed it, I watched it on Bolton.
There's no way we're getting around it.
I don't even want to talk at this
point. Oh, at least you're just gasping for breath.
Anyway, I liked it. It's a weird hybrid in the making. It's this weird, it kind of has this, Noé kind of still has this kind of element of shock value that he's still holding on to, even though he's getting cracking on a bit. He ain't 20 anymore, and it has a kind of a softer, kind of melancholic feel to it as well.
Softcore? Softer, sorry.
Softer. Jesus. Anyway, and I think this
we
is...
We are
this
all approaching the age of 30, if not over it, just to be clear.
We're well over it at this point. But I think...
I'm not.
This is a bridging film. I think there's something more to come from, a more mature kind of work ahead of him. I think... I hope.
Are you saying what about say, it's less intense than Enter the Void?
It's less intense than anything he's done. I mean, you've seen
it's not as visual as
it is kind of beautiful.
Yeah,
some
but
of the
nothing is as
amazing.
Visual
yeah.
as Enter the Void.
It is visual in a different way, though. And
no,
mean,
it is.
Best. And it is. It's
there is a lot.
It's
of
a sense. Penetrating examination yeah. of.
It's another. It's into a void
also,
in another sense.
And I don't get. I'm with Pierre Bradshaw on this. It's very sexy. I think we find sex boring in films when it's done well are idiots. I'm kind of with Bradshaw on that.
So what you're saying is Love 3D will turn you on.
I didn't see Love 3D, I saw 2D.
I'm kind of glad I didn't watch it in 3D.
So me too, for many reasons. One being a particular shot.
Oh no, really?
Although I am keen to kind of give it a go. Just
experience.
It's like a theme park ride, so to speak. But I liked it. It's not perfect, and it has problems, but... there's a genuine kind of thing to it that I liked, and I wouldn't dismiss it out of hand. I think it's
well worth watching, but I'm not. Yeah, I wouldn't rush out to see it.
Okay. And my last one before I finish, which I watched before, and it's not.
Do you reckon you'll be a minority opinion on this as well? Come on, three
for
three.
We're on safe hands here. Right. It's not my top 10 of the year. It's just going to miss out, but I want to talk about it because I probably won't get a chance to talk about it. Best of Enemies.
Ah,
it's excellent,
isn't it?
It's excellent.
Political debate when it was about the debating.
And intelligence and intellectualism as an
on
idea.
Both sides.
On TV.
on both sides on TV. This is Gore Vidal and William F. Buckley's series of debates in the 1960 debates, elections.
Yeah, the 1968,
68,
the Republican Democrat conventions, where
we're quite
politics of upheaval was the name of the game.
Yeah.
And that kind of, and the language in it, the wordplay, the digs, the knives, the soft knives in the side.
I know, it feels like watching two Foghorn Leghorns with university degrees go at each other.
That's great. And I kind of, the last couple of years, I've complained a lot about documentaries that have a great story and a great subject, but don't do anything with their own kind of...
Just
show it, because you don't have to do anything. Well, you do. It's a film, so you have to do something with it.
You have to put a structure on it.
And what they do here, and I think they're elevated by the subject matter, because there is quality there, they actually get great talking heads, really interesting people. They frame it just right. They put it in context in terms of historically, politically, where this sits now in terms of politics, in terms of policing and stuff like that. It's really a really mature and interesting and fascinating piece.
And surprisingly relevant.
Yeah,
and
compare and contrast with the Republican debates today.
As I pointed out, I think it'd make a superb double bill with In Her Voice.
Now, that is a lovely comparison, because, of course, it's around
the end
same
of the year.
Yeah, I think I really liked it. And it just missed out on the top 10.
I mean,
I liked it a lot.
William F. Buckley is the complete antithesis of Doc Sportello.
William Buckley is the uniform version of Josh Brolin. he's almost the political. The political arm is William Buckley of that kind of policing
movement,
you know. And I think it'd make a fascinating little one.
Bye bye,
Philip.
Yes. What have I watched? Oh, well, I suppose there's one thing I should mention. You were talking about your marathoning of Star Wars. I had a marathon experience of a slightly different kind. I watched just last weekend. The good folks at the Irish Film Institute.
Oh, good God. Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm ready for this.
Are you sitting on the edge of your seat?
I am.
And the doorway, the bullets rip. The sound of feet. Sorry.
Anyway, where was I? Yes. So we were treated to a marathon showing over 2 days of all of Jacques Rivette's Out One, Noli Me Tangere. I guess from that reaction you're not so as enthused about this as I am.
I was hoping to get to it. But my crammed year of doing a lot, I didn't have 2 days.
Hours.
I didn't have
2 days.
A whole weekend to give away.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
No,
fair
enough.
But had it been in January where I had nothing on, I think I would have got to it. Alas.
Out of curiosity, right? So, how. If at 12 hours and 40 minutes, right?
Yeah.
At what point do they consider it. Like, how. You sat in the cinema for 12 hours and 40 minutes?
Over 2 days, yes.
Oh, so you did 6:20 in each.
Well, you see, the way Out One is structured
logistically, I was going to say.
Well, you see, the way Out One is structured is, it was originally conceived as a TV show and it's comprised of 8 episodes, so the breaks come naturally. Now, that said, they're not evenly timed; they vary from just over an hour to nearly 2 hours.
Yeah.
But the basic plot is about two theatre groups rehearsing two different Aeschylus plays, while at the same time two. Con artists working completely separately are doing their thing to dupe people out of money and whatever else. The blueprint for modern binge watching is laid down here. This is made back in 1971, and Rivette pitched it originally as a TV series. The French networks didn't go for it, and for years it was considered it's this long lost kind of holy grail.
You could name that Heimat as well, isn't it? The German thing.
Heimat. As Kevin was made with a very specific focus, it's a documentary. Mm. This was this long lost fictional piece with so much going on, and it was impossible to see. Impossible. Then a couple of years ago, a German box set came out, and now it's been getting a lot of showings all around. We got this showing. It was showed
so in
London.
A lot of the series came in London as well. Like, there's a lot
it
of people I follow that went to it.
It did, and I kind of loved it. It's
it sounded exhausting, though. I will say that.
I must say it was, but in a worthwhile way.
It's almost for the badge that you've done.
Yeah, something like that. There is something really accomplished about it.
Yeah.
And
level up, film critic.
Well, I mean, there's stuff in there that you're going to watch, like all these rehearsals and exercises that these groups are doing, and they go on for a while. You're going to think to yourself initially. Okay, why are we still watching this? But as you get more and more into it, you become acclimatized to the vibe.
And the pace.
And plot does kind of start to bleed in a little, so it gets easier as it goes on. And all these disparate stories and all these disparate characters
featuring a bevy of French talent from that time. And it all starts to dovetail together relatively neatly, but at the same time, it's Jacques Rivette, so you're not going to get any concrete answers. But it is hypnotizing.
Were you ever bored?
Was I bored? No.
Okay.
Never bored. Okay. And I would say if anybody is considering watching it, it's very easy to do as a binge watch of a TV series. You know, one or two episodes. Whenever.
Yeah. Okay.
And
that's the way to go at it, maybe.
Yeah. And that is, you can do that now because there is a Rivette box set featuring one coming out in January.
Oh, nice.
Limited edition, but there it is.
Bye now, Alex.
That Russia, the HND.
Yeah. But like I say, it was well worth me doing just for the experience. And I, you know, anybody who's even vaguely interested in the French New Wave cinema, yeah, go check it out.
Very good.
And other than that, well, I don't know. I feel like all else has bled out of my mind, but I will mention one thing, and I know Jay will be interested in this.
Excellent.
I rewatched Eyes Wide Shut, a film which for a long time I did not care for.
Ah, okay.
And
were your eyes open to it?
I'm on record as being the masterpiece. I think it's
I disagreed with you the last time into this. I disagree with you still, but I do like it a lot more.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's inch higher.
Oh, no, this is a good jump.
Oh,
I will
okay.
say, I still have problems with it. There are some scenes which I think are just daft, and there are times when it drags. But the second watch did reveal the performances were better than I thought. Well, it's directed by Stanley Kubrick, so
yeah.
I needn't mention direction.
Yeah.
It is. Everything is so deliberate.
Yeah, it's just so.
Just so. I mean,
it's Kubrick.
You know,
nothing's by accident.
They didn't film for over a year for nothing.
No, it didn't.
That contributes to this atmosphere of. It's the most unsexy psychosexual thriller.
Oh, it is. I mean, that's actually the. When
point.
You talk about
yeah.
unsexy, it's
now,
not
that's
like that. It's horrible.
That is the
point. It's frustrating. In that way, I think
yeah.
everything about it is thwarted.
Which for some people define sex.
Well, yeah, well, yeah.
You know. Speak for yourself.
I'm not saying
awkward silence.
joshing, I'm kidding.
I find the same is true of every Kubrick film, though. Like, I mean, some are instantly some are instantly masterpieces, right?
Okay,
but
okay.
Every Kubrick film, when you rewatch it, you will find more.
Some I agree. The general
grow
stature, as you were called,
yeah.
as a thing, anyway. Certainly in comparison to their original reviews.
Like, I'm trying to. Is there a film that is still considered to be a bad Kubrick
film? I would argue
Fear
that.
Fear and Desire, his first one, is by all accounts terrible.
I'm not a massive fan of Lolita. And I'm going to be honest with you, I think the remake is better.
A lot of people are saying that, and
okay.
I probably agree.
Yeah, I think it's just be, and it probably be, in some ways, not people's fault, in some ways, it's of the time of what you kind of get away with. I just don't think it quite does what he thinks it's going to do. But,
no, I would say.
Well, it does have Mason.
Do still quite like it, but I'd say I'd make a similar case for Clockwork Orange. They age quite badly.
Disagree. I know where you're coming from.
Stylistically.
But good God, there's so much more that drags it through that, though. I think.
Yeah, it's got a punch and a half.
Oh, it doesn't have. It really does.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, yes. Some of them are better than others, but we know what the masterpieces are.
Yeah.
But I think that as a rule, generally, like Kubrick films tend to age relatively well, with perhaps the exception of the ones that you mentioned.
Yeah, same way the Hitchcock films age well as well.
Yeah.
I think I would argue that Dr. Strangelove has aged better than any of them.
Dr. Strange, you know what? Yeah, I would say to anybody, you want Kubrick's sex movie, go watch Dr. Strange.
Barry Lyndon is
Precious
well.
Bodily Fluids.
Yeah. That's actually what
I saw
thinking
that
70mm exactly.
in the IFI.
Oh my god.
Because
it's glorious.
It's a big change.
The
universe
piece.
It doesn't get further.
You don't
yeah,
get
exactly.
further
yeah,
from
yeah,
it.
So. Yeah, not
and,
good.
But I mean, and its reaction to it was originally quite muted as well, much like Eyes Wide Shut, I thought.
Yeah,
so
that's
I think as you get further from it,
I would agree.
It gets better.
Yeah.
Still no improving Ryan O'Neill's accent, though.
No,
minor nickel.
But the thing is, he was nobility of the time, or relative nobility of the time in Ireland. So there's some chance that they may have had.
Don't talk to me about affected that.
The most Mayo man ever.
Mayo boy of the Champs-Élysées.
Right, so I've been watching a lot of Christmas movies.
You don't say!
I'm kidding.
Wow, yes, in being that...
Hit me with it.
Yeah, so
what do you got?
I
Of course, I watched Die Hard and Die Hard 2.
I liked Die Hard 2.
Yeah,
I like it
a lot. Yeah.
I have to say.
I didn't like it when I saw
better.
It. That was a long
Vengeance
time ago.
Better.
Oh, Die Hard with the Vengeance is better.
I prefer the second one.
It's a lot of fun.
But anyway.
But the original trilogy is just
it is, yeah, yeah.
Anything
there was only a trilogy.
I didn't mind four.
I didn't mind four because I liked Timothy Olyphant. But
why does John McClane need an origin story?
He doesn't. No.
Yeah, like isn't the central appeal of John McClane?
He's not a superhero.
The wrong
place,
the wrong time.
Yeah,
like the
very idea of giving him a purpose and an origin story.
The origin story.
But he wasn't supposed to be there.
Die Hard.
Or Police Academy.
Yeah, but as far as Die Hard at Christmas, all you can say to that is her.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Die Hard, by virtue of being set at Christmas, is the ultimate one.
A lot of my Christmas movies are only Christmas movies, it's a story about reuniting families.
Yeah, same thing. Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, yeah. Bringing families together. Yeah.
It's also the most Reaganite film ever, if you want to read that into it. But yeah,
which one? Both of them, sure.
Well, especially the first one. But yeah.
Well, yeah, so, yeah.
And with its, yeah, it's sort of creepy, borderline, sort of Japan-phobic sort of content.
Yeah,
I also rewatched Lethal Weapon and Lethal Weapon 2. Santa Claus.
It's just been revoked. The Santa Claus. Why the Santa Claus? It's a great line. It has.
The Santa Claus is fun. The Santa Claus 2 is dreadful.
Never saw it.
It's been a long time.
The first one's good. Yeah. The rest are terrible.
First
there's
one
also one with Martin
idea.
Short.
Yes,
as Jack Frost.
Is it?
Yeah. Continuing the downward slope.
So yeah, Escape Clause.
Come on!
Now, to be fair, the first one has its share of puns like that as well, but it somehow works.
The second
worked.
One is the Mrs. Claus.
Yeah. So, come on, they're really milking
that. I'm not arguing that here. That's not bad.
So, I rewatched Elf, which I really enjoyed.
Everyone likes Elf? No?
Yeah. I never really warmed to that, actually.
I'm not a huge
No can do, eh?
I don't mind it. Okay. But that's all I got.
And the two Home Alones.
Blimey, what didn't you watch?
I loved the first Home Alone, I'd say.
In
still.
New York for the first time, and it's great. It was like that's from Home Alone 2.
Isn't it the most familiar place you've ever been, despite you've never been there?
Yeah, I can recognize everywhere from films. It's amazing. That's from Home Alone. Yeah, what are the odds of that?
You can orient yourself by that very fact. You have an idea of where you are at all times.
Ghostbusters building. I'm flashing back, people. I'm flashing back.
Yeah, and otherwise it's pretty much being...
Statue from Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah. You win the night. That's great.
Blinding lights from Brooklyn. Oh, God, close the door.
You could have gone with Statue from Planet of the Apes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Or also Cloverfield.
Statue from Ghostbusters.
Good point, yeah.
And then the Star Wars and Love and stuff. Mostly I've been catching up with a lot of the sort of Oscar-y ones or the ones that might potentially go into end of year, but a lot of them we'll talk about when we get to our end of year one, our end of year podcast. But primarily the only thing that I've rewatched I want to talk about is Minions. Minions is terrible. Minions is absolutely dreadful.
This actually shocks me.
Minions
I haven't seen it. But
is
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it is.
Do you think they grew the short straw there?
The best bit in it is when Gru shows up at the very end. And I don't care if I'm spoiling that for anyone because it's a terrible film.
Oh dear, I think it's been knocked over.
So I guess it really was a bitter yellow pill.
We're not going to beat that tonight.
Yeah,
no.
But we're going to try.
Anybody, least of all Universal, could have thought that little walking yellow M&M, not M&M, Tic Tacs, could have become this popular.
Minions make billions.
But it's another case of they've spun off the secondary characters for a film.
Like penguins.
And the film has been fucking dreadful.
Yeah, there is penguins. Actually, I mean, second bananas are second for a reason.
There's only one instance of that where the film is actually, in an animation, where the film is actually any good. That's Puss in Boots. Puss in Boots is
But
actually
doesn't matter,
good.
Though,
Puss
because
Puss
look
good.
How much money Minions made. It doesn't matter. It's made, like, one of the biggest films of all time. But
yeah,
it's
Universal are rolling in money at the moment.
And that's not including the merchandise.
Yeah.
That's a fortune.
It'll keep them tick-tacking
over. And it
costs
less than the first... Oh, God, stop.
It's god-awful, though. It is. It's terrible.
I'm not arguing to it. I'm not watching it.
It looked just like a series of vignettes, sticky scenes. Just
for the
actually, yeah, so
just so they can go.
Well, that's it. Well, I mean, yeah. So, what is does it have a story, which would seem to be a problem?
The general gist of it is it's minions through the ages. So it starts off with you know the couch joke from The Simpsons, where it shows the Simpsons evolving. That is essentially what you get
for an hour and a half.
That's the first. Oh, that's basically the opening sequence, and then they get to find themselves trapped, and they need a new master, so they go to like.
Happy slaves. No, the best slaves.
Yeah, but they go.
Well, they are.
Well, the thing is, they get trapped in ice.
Django told us nothing.
So this is what happens. So they team up with the dinosaurs to team up with
dinosaurs eat second bananas.
Yeah, but the team. Basically, they're looking for an evil master and so they team up with various different people throughout the ages. They team up with the Egyptians, but they manage to knock a pyramid on top of all the Egyptians.
Here's a question. What are they doing between 1939 and 1945?
They are trapped in ice.
Okay.
Yeah.
So really?
They, after Napoleon, they are trapped in ice. Yeah.
Oh, let's stop this. I don't want to talk about this anymore.
This is dodgy territory. I can feel the ground shifting.
Until in the 60s, they come out and they end up going to sort of evil con and looking for a new master, and they end up having Scarlet Overkill is their new
Sandra
master.
Bullock.
Is Sandra Bullock, and she is very one note, and it is just.
Yeah. This sounds repugnant.
Yeah, I'm just not a fan.
No. I'm not going to watch it, so.
No. And the thing is, even. I like Despicable Me and Despicable Me 2 to a lesser extent. Well, I like Despicable Me.
I've only seen Despicable Me, and I quite like it.
It's okay, yeah. It's no Kung Fu Panda. If we're talking non Pixar animated films.
Just for the crack, Megamind.
Okay.
It was just.
I can
fun.
See that, yeah.
Okay. And Will Ferrell. Yeah.
you can't lose with Will Ferrell. But more on that later.
So we will we'll move on to the news. And in the big news, JDIF is no longer.
That's not much of a change.
Jemison has been dropped. Our Jemison's sponsorship came to an end, and they have a new sponsor. It's Audi. So it is now the Audi Dublin International Film Festival.
So you'll be going to an ADIF screening. ADIF.
Yes. Hey, that sounds okay. It runs off the tongue pretty easy.
It just takes some getting used to.
Right? Yeah, yep. So they were announced yesterday as a title sponsor, and today we got the news that we have an opening film.
You knew already.
Which I predicted about a month ago. Yeah. So,
so sing when you're winning now.
Yes. It was quite obvious, though, that it was going... Yeah. That if it played Sundance, which it is going to do... Then it was very likely to play.
Because
it's a month later.
Decent choice.
Yeah. So it's 18 to the 28th of February is the Jemison interview.
Oh,
it's good to have it back. It's I thought I wasn't quite convinced by the March dates.
Yeah.
I agree.
I agree with that.
They kind of have to get out of the way of March, April next year because 2016 being the year that it is, you kind of don't want to be anywhere in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Going to be busy enough.
I'm hoping for a stellar year next year. I wasn't that convinced of this year's one, so we have the hope for better.
Yeah, but Sing Street. Anyway, this is directed once. This is his new film. It it centres around a young guy played by Ferdia Walsh-Pello, who is trying to form a rock band in the 1980s and.
Did I read it was vaguely autobiographical?
It is vaguely, yeah.
Not literally, but kind of informed by
exactly. It. And it's got that time, the 80s in Dublin, like U2 and bands like that were forming. So it's set in that sort of scene. Originally, U2 were meant, or two of the members of U2 were meant to write music for the film, but that didn't work out.
Thankfully,
but it will have a lot of period music in it, which will be good. I mean, because you have Ramones and all sorts of stuff. Then, so you're going to have it's going to have that. It's got a good director, it's got a great cast. You got Aidan Gillen there as well, Jack Rayner, and stuff. So it's going to be a great.
What accents are you going to pick?
In fairness, it's Sing Street, right? They filmed on Sing Street in Dublin, and Aidan Gillen lives in Portobello. He literally got up out of his house, and the film set was on his front door. He didn't really have to go that far.
His accent might come from further. That's it, I'll have a longer commute.
Also, in the last, just recently, the Golden Globe nominations came out. Yeah. And the Golden Globes, I mean, they get...
Can we not care about these? Well, I suppose we do.
Yeah. No, we do. Because they come in big for yourselves. God, no. They come in for a lot of criticism.
They are a bit crap.
Because it's a drinking party.
It is.
And you want famous people to show up, so you give them nominations.
It is. But, did you notice... No nomination for Johnny Depp. And they love Johnny Depp.
They gave him one for The Tourist.
Yeah, exactly. So that's really weird.
They
had some eclectic picks.
It's some okay choices, actually. Exactly.
It's worth talking about.
The drama and comedy musical division does lend them to a bit of...
But it's fun, though. I kind of like the idea.
And sometimes just plain odd.
Yeah. And the thing is, they get 10 nominees there. Oscar gets 9. So it's not that much.
It's
almost impossible. It's almost impossible.
Go through the list. Let us know.
So, best motion picture drama, Carol. There. Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah, really
nice to see that there.
But particularly it's in drama, that's actually a pretty strong nomination.
Revenant.
Which
I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, of an Irish interest. Room.
Yeah.
And Spotlight.
Mm. Well, that's the one.
Yeah,
so they are... it's not a bad list. You have motion picture comedy or musical. The Big Short.
Yeah, that's okay. I didn't mind it.
Joy.
Sorry.
David O. Russell. Anita
Simon. They're ironically called Joy.
Allegedly.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Then the most bonkers decision of all. Why, in the name of God, is this in comedy or musical? The Martian.
I can see why, though.
Yeah, it's
fun.
It's quirky.
It has comic elements, but it's not.
It's a drama.
It involves the line he has to science the out of it.
Yeah, he does, yeah. Spy.
I like Spy.
I like Spy.
And Trainwreck.
I liked Trainwreck. Far too long.
It's a very well-made conventional rom-com.
It was good until it walked off the cliff in the second hour and then didn't really recover.
Right. But
I liked first hour.
If you have to pick 5 comedies of the year,
it would safely be in there.
Well, they picked 4.
That says more about the dearth of comedies rather than the quality of the ones.
This year wasn't a stellar year.
No, it wasn't. A lot of flops.
But more on that later.
Yeah. 10-2. Oh, yeah.
Best wall-to-wall burger comedy failures, if you will.
oh, God.
Very good.
Best performance by an actress in motion picture drama. We have Cate Blanchett for Carol.
Of course. Dean
Meryl Streep. Brie Larson
except
for Room.
More so.
Who's... she's fantastic in Room.
She is.
Rooney Mara for Carol.
I love that
two
of them are
nominated.
That's
what it should be, because they are co-leads.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But that's not going to happen at Oscar season.
Saoirse Ronan for Brooklyn.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yeah. And Alicia Vikander for The Danish Girl.
Ah.
Alicia
not
Vikander,
good actors from film.
She's been... Her and Rooney Mara are both sort of being Oscar pigeonholed into supporting, so in both cases, nice to see they're in lead. Then it's Bryan Cranston. For Trumbo.
Yeah, I heard it's quite broad, but yeah.
But it's a performance piece, I'm guessing Skyler mainly.
Nicely done.
Leonardo DiCaprio for The Revenant.
Yeah.
Michael Fassbender for Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
Eddie Redmayne for Danish Girl and Will Smith for Concussion.
That's a weird one.
But then we're talking about the Globes and Will Smith looks like he'd be fun to have.
Yeah, if you were having a drink up, you want Will Smith there.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true.
Well, new millennium, baby.
Actress, comedy, or musical, we have Jennifer Lawrence for Joy because Jennifer Lawrence has been nominated if she's in a film.
Particularly David O. Russell film.
True.
Melissa McCarthy for Spy, who she's the best thing in Spy.
Jason Statham, is amazing. Although
the ensemble's great.
Rosebud
is also good, I'd argue.
And Jude Law.
And Peters.
Yeah.
Rosebud is good.
Everybody is good in Spy.
I like Spy.
Amy Schumer in Trainwreck.
Yeah.
She's very good in Trainwreck.
It really
is hard
film.
It is,
Maggie Smith for The Lady in the Van.
Of course.
And Lily Tomlin for Grandma.
She's quite good in Grandma, I must say. She's the best thing in it.
And also, she seems like she'd be great fun to have at a drinking party.
Oh, she's like, I just want to hear her cursing a blue streak all over again. It's hilarious.
Actor in comedy or musical, Christian Bale for Big Short.
Oh, he's
Steve
a laughing
Carell
minute.
For The Big Short.
No Ryan Gosling for The Big Short.
I'm not even going to come
up. Ryan Gosling
for The Big Short.
Anybody else for The Big Short?
Matt Damon from The Martian, who will win it.
Save this one next.
Mark Ruffalo for Infinitely Polar Bear, which is a film that hasn't come out here yet.
And the last one.
I mean,
it's all right.
But the last one, I know Jay is going to be thrilled.
Al Pacino for Danny Collins.
Wow.
I just had to do it for Jay's look at his face. That's brilliant.
It's a movie about a soulless hack who discovers that he can reinvigorate his career by caring about the work that he does.
Is it the biopic of Ron Howard?
Oh, I like the sharp left turn you took there. Yeah. That's very good.
Coming later.
Sorry.
Best performance by an actress in a supporting role. Jane Fonda for Ute.
Interesting. She's only in for one scene. She's not bad, but...
For one scene?
One and a half.
Dame Judi Dench won an Oscar.
I know.
I guess they were quite fond of her. She's not bad. And I must say, I like Ute. More than some.
We'll come back to you. Yeah. Jennifer Jason Leigh for The Hateful Eight.
I like Jennifer Jason Leigh. So yeah,
very excited about The Hateful Eight.
Yeah. Helen Mirren for Trumbo. Alicia Vikander for Ex Machina.
Yeah.
And Kate Winslet for Steve Jobs.
That was one I didn't
mention. No matter what you do, whatever criticism you level at Ex Machina, Alicia Vikander is...
She is great. She's the best thing about it.
Yeah, she is.
I watched it recently.
Wasn't a
fan.
Yeah.
So I would
argue
The Only Beast was okay. Oscar Isaac was having fun.
He looked like he was in a different film to everybody else.
Yeah. But as far as a performance goes, she was great.
Yeah, she held the whole film together.
Yeah.
Supporting actor, right. Paul Dano in Love and Mercy.
He's excellent in Love and Mercy.
Haven't seen it.
Idris Elba in Beasts of No Nation.
Apparently
he's
very great.
I need to watch that.
It's very depressing, as you might imagine. God,
that's a hard watch.
As you might imagine.
Right, I do like Idris, so I suspect he's great.
It's very good.
One who should win, Mark Rylance, Bridge of Spies.
Over Elba,
yes.
Yeah, Bridge of Spies ain't bad. He is great. I mean, capital G, great.
Okay.
No, I like him. I just think Elba was something else.
Anyway. He's got Elba out of the way.
Yay! Michael Shannon in 99 Homes.
Best thing about that film by a stretch.
God, that wasn't a very good film at all.
No. Is he supporting, really?
Yeah.
He is. The main guy, what's his face?
Andrew Garfield. Forgot about him, didn't you?
Yeah.
I actually thought Garfield was probably arguably better than
much like
the
casting director of the new Spider-Man
film. Age of his fault.
Maybe.
I never saw it.
And the last nominee?
Sylvester Stallone for Creed.
Heard nothing but good things.
Is it good? Not far off. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And Stallone is good.
Cool.
I mean, he's playing the role that got him all the acclaim to start, so it shouldn't be that hard.
Well, he won a Best Picture Oscar for.
Yeah, he did.
Director motion picture gives a sort of more
broad.
Yeah, exactly. It's not going to reflect the Oscars in that respect. Todd Haynes for Carol. He's a shoe-in. Alejandro González Iñárritu for The Revenant is a shoe-in as well. Tom McCarthy for Spotlight. So the three of them will be Oscar nominated. But
Tom McCarthy, director of The Cobbler.
Director of Spotlight. Also of The Cobbler.
But whether or not George Miller for Mad Max Fury Road and Ridley Scott for The Martian much more
obvious. I love Carol, but if I had to pick one of those right now, George Miller.
Yeah.
He directed
I'd agree with that.
It is a director's vision brought to grimy, stuttering, sandblasted life.
And plus the length of time he spent making as well. Like, gee, it's mad. Best screenplay for motion picture. So Emma Donoghue for Room, so another Irish nomination. Emma Donoghue is, Irish, who lives in Canada. Tom McCarthy and Josh Singer for Spotlight. Charles Randolph and Adam McKay for The Big Short. And Aaron Sorkin for Steve Jobs. And Quentin Tarantino for The Hateful Eight. Now, I'm sorry, but QT's scripts are generally not the best part of his films.
They used to be once upon a time, but God, they're in serious need of an edit. They're too long. I'd be more excited about The Hateful Eight if it wasn't 3 goddamn hours again.
But it would be 3 hours of something utterly unlike.
But you know what the thing is, right?
But unlike anything that you've
except
what I will say, but in terms of the context of a film, you could level if you want to do, although I wouldn't, the same kind of criticism as, say, somebody like Paul Thomas Anderson who puts epics together. But he will get it out of the system by knocking out a 90-minute Adam Sandler film just to kind of...
To hone,
to kind of keep yourself sharp or whatever.
I mean,
I don't see Tarantino ever doing that again, and that's worrying. If films just get longer.
He's very unlikely to ever make a Jackie Brown.
Yeah.
Again.
Or a Reservoir Dogs, lean.
But he's
quick.
Only planning to make 10 films.
I'm sick of the Tarantino stories. There's a million.
The issues, the way that we're all so beholden. To
yes.
See, it is
like,
great.
Kill Bill 3 coming soon. It's like, shut up. He just mentioned it. The Vega Brothers. There's a billion projects that he talked about for years, and they get trundled there every time he goes to the circuit. Like,
Can we move on to Best Animated Feature? Anomalisa. The Good
Dinosaur. That should be the winner right there. I don't care what else is on that list. It's Anomalisa.
Then 2 Pixar's The Good Dinosaur and Inside Out.
One of those is a good film.
Yes.
More on that later.
Oh,
the Peanuts movie.
Ah.
Which I've heard okay things about.
Yeah, I'm actually quite interested.
I love Peanuts. So.
I do
but
like
I
it.
But I get
so
the sense
too.
That they may have stripped out a lot of what makes Peanuts fun.
Maybe.
Which is the crippling depression and anxiety of the world crushing your dreams and hopes.
Good grief.
Yeah, that does not make for a good children's story.
No.
I'm sorry.
You say that.
Yeah.
Sean, yeah, they're flocking at anomalies.
And then
they better be.
Shaun the Sheep movie.
Which I loved.
Yes. It's Aardman. You can't go too far.
It's
impossible
great
that
fun.
It'll be a bad film.
Jay,
speaking
just
of
wait.
Of animated films that are likely to be very very good, Laika trailer for the new Laika.
Yeah.
Ooh,
Yeah, yeah. They know what to do.
That looks very very good. Best foreign language film. So I was disappointed to see Viva miss out here, but the Brand New Testament, the Club, The Fencer, Mustang, and Son of Saul are the.
It's all good, baby.
Son of Saul.
Son of Saul, it hasn't been released here yet, but all that aside, that is the best film I've seen this year.
Yeah, well, they were talking about having a best picture run, which would be incredible for a foreign language film.
It deserves
in
it.
This day and age.
I got into best cinematography last year.
It's
so
rare, but
yeah.
It'd be lovely
no,
to see.
It was. But in this day and age,
it's
great.
Yeah.
It's
Moore got into best foreign language.
Yeah.
Best film.
Okay. Director, actress.
Yeah.
Then, best original score, Phillips category, Carter Burwell for Carol, Alexander Desplat, because, you know,
it's
Alexander
him.
Desplat.
For the Danish girl.
He cranked something out.
Ennio Morricone for his first score in years for The Hateful Eight.
AKA The Thing's B-side.
Daniel Pemberton for Steve Jobs, and Rushi Sakamoto and Alva Noto for The Revenant.
I like the score for Carol, so
The
like
score for Carol
that.
Is
it's
beautiful.
Really, really
it's mind you, the Daniel Pemberton score for Steve Jobs as well. The structure of Steve Jobs almost like three different movies, so it's
yeah.
almost like three different scores. It's very interesting score, and Pemberton has had a heck of a year.
Structure of Steve Jobs is a play.
It is. It's a stage play.
Well, it's designed like three films, and the score reflects that. I'm a big Sakamoto fan, and I actually haven't heard the Revenant score yet, sad to say, but I will. And
I don't care.
I'm just delighted that Morricone is back doing something big. Huge, even. He's been...
I don't care about
original. Are you hoping that it'll be for eight?
Yeah. What Jay said, he has apparently used a lot of samples of unused tracks from his original score to The Thing. So, I don't know. I'm keen to hear it.
Well, it's a bunch of strangers locked together in the snow. It seems appropriate.
True.
No, yeah, I'll give you that. I don't care about original song because they're... all terrible, and
the
writing on the wall from Spectre, which is bloody dreadful.
It is, but not all
Octopus
bad.
Octopus video.
No,
dreadful.
No.
If you do want to pick one, Simple Song number 3 from Youth, Dazzling.
Right. Okay, we moved the other nomination. Then primarily,
we're not a TV podcast,
from television, but just
alas.
To say that Katrina Balf got nominated for. Outlander, so that's nice to see.
I've heard that's an okay show.
It is. It's a very odd show, but yeah.
I think shows these days they seem compelled to be odd.
Well, no. Well, we're past the golden age and into the pulpy age.
Oh, good. Well, of course we are. We're getting rehashed X Files and Twin Peaks.
Don't start something you can't finish there.
But True Blood was very much that.
Yeah, but it was the exception
the
that proved.
Mark, wasn't
yeah.
it? It was the moving from one into the other.
So I would argue Breaking Bad.
From season one into
Breaking
season
Bad is
two.
Breaking Bad, I think, weighed more on the prestige side.
But it's basically a supervillain origin story
of
told in a
it.
Prestige format.
Yes,
like,
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
But I think the pulp went out in the end. It wasn't as
okay.
hot in the climax
yeah.
as some. I prefer my prestige kind of things.
I'm very excited about Westworld.
I'm more excited about what we're going to talk about next.
Okay,
but this has got an interesting reaction.
Yeah, so the European Film Awards were held in Berlin last week.
These are always an opportunity just to go a little left field. And I think they did that this year.
I think they did. But we had a couple of Irish winners. The Lobster won for Best Costume Design. It also won for Best Screenplay. And Song of Sea won Best Animated Feature. So nice. But the slightly more left field choices were
Youth, basically.
Well, Youth, yeah, Youth won Best Director, Best Actor, and Best Film, and Michael Caine received a sort of Lifetime Achievement Award, and then received Best Actor for Youth.
Yeah,
Lifetime still going, baby.
The reaction to Youth on the critical side of things has been, dare I say, polite.
Yeah, very much so.
I, as I say, I liked it, but it's.
it's Paolo Sorrentino's follow-up to The Great Beauty, and it's not The Great Beauty. But there's a lot to like in it, a lot. Just how well it comes together, I think, is going to be a matter of opinion.
His work in English is...
choppy.
Yeah.
It's, I preferred it to This Must Be the Place, and I actually didn't mind This Must Be the
His
Place.
His Irish co-production with Sean Penn.
Yeah.
And David Byrne.
See, all those elements together, it just does not sound like it shouldn't work. And I think it does barely.
It takes place in Beggar's Bush, it's very obvious.
Yeah, this is, well, again, he's shooting in English again, set in Switzerland, filmed there, with Michael Caine, Harvey Keitel, Rachel Weisz, and Jane Fonda. And it's weird. It's got some of the same themes about aging and the passage of time as A Great Beauty. It doesn't have the satirical bite, you know, the whole economic collapse of Italy and whatever else. Perhaps a bit too it does a bit too much of that Sorrentino thing of easy emotion. He can bleed emotion out of a scene like nobody else, and some people find it very cheap. I think it's quite effective.
I think he's less of it in Il Divo.
Yeah, Il Divo certainly is the coldest of it.
I love that. I'm sorry, I loved it.
I like it, not as much as some, but yeah, if you thought that, you know, The Great Beauty or yeah, well, that's probably the one it's going to be most compared to. It's got the same emotionality, but more so, and less of the satirical bite. But it is, I liked it because it's beautifully shot. Some good performances. Rachel Weisz is the MVP.
Not Fonda.
Fonda's good.
Weisz is obviously great.
Yeah,
It's the best role Kane's had.
The Lobster.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's had a great year. But Kane's good. Keitel is even better, and I think Weisz seals any scene she's in. But I don't know. Best Picture? No. I think this is going to be the high point of its awards run.
3,000 members of the European Film Academy.
Yeah, but if you're going to watch out for anything else in the awards season, Best Original Song is its best bet.
Okay. Then another Lifetime Achievement Award winner was Charlotte Rampling, who also went on to win Best Actress.
I have no grumbles with this whatsoever, because she gave, I think, the best performance of the year in 45 years. I think she's incredible in that film.
Well, we'll get to that.
We will, but
we're only rampling up.
No.
Hey.
Best Documentary went to Amy over The Look of Silence.
Amy's doing well.
It's been a great year for documentaries, though.
It has. It's picking and choosing is tough, and I do prefer The Look of Silence, but I did like Amy.
Yeah. I haven't seen Amy yet, but I tend to rectify that this weekend.
Mm.
On Philip's side, The Duke of Burgundy picked up Best Composition.
Beautiful score to a beautiful film, but I will talk more of that later.
And A Pigeon Sat in a Branch Reflecting on Existence won Best Comedy.
I will also talk about that later.
Oh!
Right.
I like this. It's like movie nerd poker.
Yeah. Whoa! Spanish film Marshland won the Audience Award.
I heard that's pretty damn good.
I liked it. I saw it. I think it's actually
I thought you'd
really good.
Before,
I
yes.
really liked it.
And so, that was the European Film Awards.
That was the week that was.
Then, Irish independent film, Darkest on the Edge of Town, which I've talked about a few times.
You have.
Has been picked up for US Netflix.
Mm. Only US?
US and Canada.
Okay,
it's been added to my list as a watch.
Not Irish and UK, although that.
No, it hasn't. Not yet. No.
Okay. You just know that I figure a lot of the US watches of that are going to be people who
are going to
take it for a Springsteen doc.
Yes, of course. Yeah, that's the name. Yeah. Then on to Sundance, we have a few films heading that way. It was 6 films heading to Sundance this year.
Pretty good.
Any Given Sundance?
Yeah, Any Given Sundance. So previously mentioned, Sing Street, that is heading to Sundance.
Very good.
Also, Rebecca Daly's Mammal is going to world premiere there. Then we have The Lobster is heading over because it hasn't opened yet.
That's weird. I thought it had.
Yeah, no, it hasn't
Let's
opened
see if
yet.
We can get some awards love cooking there.
Well, it'll be for next year.
Yeah, that's it.
So that's a bit odd.
It's also it's very rare to have it open here, even though it's an Irish Polish co-production, to have it open here before doing the awards circuit over there.
Yeah, it's peculiar. It's
causing a lobster.
I like a. I do.
It's terrible.
I know. That's why I like it.
Bless you.
That is. Yeah. No. You just no.
I just thought I'd lob it in.
Oh, stuff.
Don't put it in.
Yeah, so I mean, the lobster really is something that you'd want to
do see.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, because it's very good. Paddy Bratnock's Viva, the Irish Oscar, best foreign language Oscar contender, is also going to play there with Stillman's Love and Friendship, which is
not the follow up to Love and Mercy.
Nope, definitely not.
Part of the Love and Mercy trilogy,
or the follow up to The Last Days of Disco. It has Kate Beckinsale and Joyce Fenya and Stephen Fry.
Oh, okay,
filmed
really
here. Filmed here in Dublin.
That's a threesome I would never have imagined.
But now you can't stop.
Nor imagine with Stephen Fry. Yeah.
And Peter Yan Dupuy's The Land of the Enlightened, which is a co-production with Fascinating Films here. It's a study of children coping with the aftermath of the Afghanistani conflict. So
sounds fun.
Yeah, so that's that obviously is a documentary. So
okay.
Yeah, so I mean, it's last year we had Brooklyn play there, so, and went on then to
presumptive awards glory.
Yeah, the year before, Boyhood. Played there before going on, Whiplash, before going on to.
It's got pedigree.
Also, it's got a lot of films that are terrible that always get praised.
Yeah,
that is true.
Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, baby.
There's one of them every year that comes along and it's awful.
Yeah, Sundance is because of its nature, because everyone's up in the mountains and they kind of.
The oxygen is lower.
Isn't that Barack Obama's excuse in one of the debates last time?
Yeah.
No, it was Al Gore. Anyway,
it's always a bit
that
weird.
Right.
Yeah.
So, top 10 in the Irish box office at 10, Spectre.
Oh, still there.
Yeah.
I really don't like Spectre.
Well, have we reached the point where we can actually talk about it?
Oh, absolutely.
I haven't seen it, so.
Oh, you haven't seen it? Okay, well, then let's not talk about it.
That's fine by me.
I was really underwhelmed by that film.
I loved the first hour. I genuinely loved the first hour, the sort of occult stuff that happens, making Spectre seem vaguely Masonic and stuff. And then
came The Author of All Your Pain.
Yes.
That is a terrible line. It was terrible in the trailer. It was terrible in the film.
It's not the worst thing about that character.
No. No, certainly not.
But we'll talk about that when Jay actually gets to see it.
I want Jay to see it. I just want to see his apoplectic reaction afterwards.
You can't waltz in here and say something like that.
Oh, hey! Christoph, with yourself. That's the best I got at this stage of the night.
Oh, that's not brilliant.
No, it's not.
Anyway, Spectre, everyone's seen it.
Except for Jay.
Yeah, in the world.
I saw it in New York. It's still playing in New York.
Are you going to see it at some point, Jay?
Yeah,
say do.
I'll say
do.
Stop.
Lee, I doubt. Anyway.
I hate you guys.
at 9, the night before.
Oh, still the favorite film of the year.
Go on, here's Phil. Phil loves this one.
It is
actually a work of genius.
Yes, I agree. It's a superb review.
It's marvellous.
I basically structured it and wrote it like a version of A Christmas Carol. Well, it's called The Night Before. What do you want?
It's better than the film, I suspect.
It is. And I didn't hate the film.
The film has got a very reviews. I hated it. I despised it. It's really? About three unlikable characters doing.
So it's like every comedy being released in the past 10 years.
Yeah, I'm sick of it. Why can't I have a comedy about a character I can actively root for and care about? Is that so much to ask?
Yes.
Apparently it is. Yeah. Apparently it clearly is.
Esky guess.
I didn't mind it. Yeah, it's not great. I wouldn't consider it a classic. I wouldn't rush out to see
it. I don't know. Plenty of people seem to, for some reason.
Yeah.
It's not making any money, though, is it?
It's earned just, 133,000 so far.
Not
great.
Not enough.
Well, good. But then again, it's released by Sony and they also released Spectre,
like
so there you don't mind.
People like a bit of levity in the holiday season.
Oh, you Rogan.
Oh. I'm sorry, I'm macking it up here.
Stop.
That doesn't make any sense.
Like macking it up? I cannot.
So, yes.
You're macking it up. Show
yourself. For those who are unfamiliar with the film set, Rogan.
Anthony Mackie and Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
They
play three douchebags go out and do douchey things while on weed and booze. And
as part of an annual tradition. Because
I sound like William F. Buckley now. They're on their weed and their booze.
Because one of them needs to grow up, the other one's about to become a father, and one of them's facing his career.
I hate it already.
Yeah, and grow up.
Set Rogan comedy. You hated this view as soon as you heard that.
As soon as it was pitched, the moment it was greenlit, Jay just had a bad feeling.
I don't dislike the 40-year-old virgin. That's all I can say.
I really
like. I've said that catching containers in it. So.
That always helps.
That always helps.
That's Steve Carell's script.
I know, but that's how I prefer.
But hold on, I would argue Steve Carell has a much spottier track record. Than
yeah, but he's warmer.
He's a warmer
presence.
Yeah, I prefer that personally.
Steve Carell and Catherine Keener. That's a couple
I
would love to see on screen again.
Yeah, very much so.
I want to see.
Now, the 40-year-old version is probably
the best of that.
Particular of that hunting, yeah, I agree.
Which is ironic, given that it inspired the current wave.
Yeah.
Not as good films.
Yeah.
You know, I know you're a bad film. You're The Night Before. Let's move on.
At 8, Bridge of Spies.
I like this.
I like it a lot as well. It's very fun, kind of prestige-y 60s.
Okay.
Very Spielberg-y.
Very Spielberg.
How did it do in the States, money-wise?
Did all right, as far as I recall. Spielberg is never
not
going to do well.
Much here, is it?
It's earned, 384,000 in 3 weeks.
That's not great.
But it doesn't look like it cost a bomb to make.
Probably not. But
no,
then again,
but even Spielberg.
It's Spielberg.
You've got to throw X amount.
It's not being marketed on Spielberg's name. It's
no,
more
true.
The premise to setting
no,
it Hanks.
Hanks, yeah, true.
Yeah. Which is a pity because they really should be selling it on Mark Rylance. I don't know if I've mentioned it, but he's great.
Yes, he is. I mean, it's that kind of.
And also,
it made $69 million in the US, so that's.
I think that's okay.
On a budget of
$40 million.
Yeah.
That's 1.5 times, so that's probably breaking profitability.
Oh,
it
is.
Plus 53 international.
Okay, so we're well covered.
Oh, it's,
yeah.
It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
But
good enough.
Yeah,
that's exactly what
you
want to
be. I was curious because it didn't make.
Yeah, no,
Diddly Squad here.
I
was just curious how it did
it.
It's done fine. It's done fine. I mean, it's not a great Spielberg. It's not a great Spielberg box office.
Okay, good enough.
Yeah. It's better Spielberg than we had in a while, with the exception of Lincoln.
It's Terminal money, though, at the moment.
Ooh.
That's interesting. But, if it didn't cost
But then again, Terminal was marketed more on Spielberg.
Also was dreadful.
Okay.
You were going to say you liked it, aren't you? you were about to say
no,
I did that.
I liked it in mind, Terminal.
We call that the Tucci effect.
Yeah.
Things with Stanley Tucci are instantly better.
They're improved dramatically.
I do love Stanley Tucci, but love only goes so far.
It's true. Generally, this seems
it's quite
easy.
A Tucci subject, if you will.
Yeah.
And we'll come back to Stanley Tucci in
later. Yay!
At 7.
Or will we?
It's Brooklyn.
I don't mind Brooklyn.
I like Brooklyn.
I like Brooklyn.
Until I didn't.
Yeah, I like the first half more than the second.
Me too.
Oh, yeah.
It's a
strong first half,
I
think.
And the second half looks like it's about to turn into a Hammer horror film.
Yes.
Does.
Basically, when our lead character returns to Ireland and is, once she's back, she'll never leave.
It
gets a bit darker, Gil. Just
a touch.
There may be a weaker man somewhere.
That's a surprise twist we're not supposed to talk about.
Poor Tom Beach.
But when it locates itself in America initially and the kind of that loss, it's great.
It's really evocation.
And you get
to
feel the director knows what they're doing in that regard and is less sure of the return.
Yeah. No, the return, I would argue both New York and The Return are very stereotypical depictions of those areas. But I think the New York thing works better.
It's more New York's just more cinematic anyway.
Yeah, and because it buys into the romance. I think the problem with the second half is that it's cynical, but it's cynical in a very cliché way.
There's a lot of clichés. They really do. And I said, I know Phillips doesn't agree, but I think Ronan gives the best performance of the year, and I really, really hope she wins the Oscar. I think she's six.
Fight,
whole thing together.
She holds it together, and I like her.
I do like her
in that film a lot.
Donald Gleeson does.
Nothing. And it's a dreadfully written role, though, in fairness.
Yeah, he doesn't get a lot.
He's the rugby guy, which you should run away from straight away. No offense, man. You should always run away from the rugby guy.
That's why they wear jackets.
I'm from Carlo.
There's no
way
possibly.
I'm sorry,
have you got a season ticket, Niall?
I do.
For who?
Lancer. Oh,
Lancer. There you go.
Forget it. No.
He doesn't wear a blazer.
No.
That's his
saving grace. That
makes
it more dangerous. Yeah, that makes it more dangerous.
The blazer with the badge.
Anyway. As somebody who comes from a small rural town, I really related to.
Yeah.
Oh, well, hang on.
You as well.
I related to it, but it doesn't change the fact that it's cliche.
No, I agree. To be honest, I related to it as well. The only issue I have with it is when it came back to Ireland and it tries to refocus what the story is.
But we're too
really
invested.
Actually,
the New York part is so strong that we're so rooted in it that going back to Ireland just feels a bit.
Yeah.
Did you
have
to?
A cut shot. And then. You get every cliche.
There's a slight spoiler alert here, but there is one scene where they're coming out of mass.
Yeah.
And they meet that dodgy old lady. And now you're back with us now, aren't you?
You'll be staying.
You'll never leave.
But it's not as bad as the scene, which I'm not going to get into in detail.
In fairness,
but
that is better writing than we had in Calvary.
True.
But so, not much better. And there's a scene
that's
where,
a very low bar.
Where there is a ceremony midway through the film in New York.
Yes.
Where the most clangorous,
contrivance
I've ever seen.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, that's so clunky.
And
you can see where it's going an hour later for the bald end, as it were.
Oh,
God, it's awful. But it's like unnecessary. Because Ronan does the whole fucking thing anyway. Yeah. You don't need to tell anybody this.
That's from the book.
It doesn't matter.
I know.
It's adaptation. Not faithful
statement.
The
art of adaptation
don't need it.
Recognize any problems.
I know, but if there are weaknesses in the source material, it may carry through to
but
the
job is to rescue the holes and strengthen the strength.
One person who's not getting enough cred for this, Julie Walters.
Also, Emery Cohn is really solid.
He is.
Except for offending the whole Italian community. With our family, it's awful.
Hey,
the Dalmio.
Hey, come on.
You're going to get beaten here. You're going to give me a beat. Let's go to Thatcher's. He stole my ragu.
No, I did find child abuse as comic punchline a bit awkward.
And spaghetti, spaghetti. We're going to go to the Italian food. Mama, you got to go.
But I take you into the other room and we laugh.
I'll tell you something, right? If this is an Italian film and you depicted or an Irish family as bad as that, we'd be up in arms. I suppose the film is abandoned, I have to say.
But anyway.
He wasn't bad, though.
To get back on point.
But the family scenes were.
You mean you didn't
cringy.
Like the precocious 10-year-old?
Who wanted to beat with an inch of his life.
Well, lucky for you, Jay, the film does that for you.
At number 6.
It was 1952, so the corporal punishment of children was not.
Also,
yeah, but
also,
it's not a punchline.
Also,
literally.
He hadn't seen the Dalmio ads by then, so I suppose
it's. So
it
counts, yeah, that's a good point.
Oh, Jesus, I need to go back.
At 6, depicting proper Irish relations in America, it's the Whitey Bulger story, Black Mass.
Yeah, this is. I'm surprised that this is holding
it.
Power.
Zero interest in seeing it.
Yeah. It's okay. Actually, wow, that's doing quite well.
Yeah.
It's grossed a lot more than British Spies, and it's been out as long.
Talking to people even sort of off the cuff or whatever, yeah. A lot of people have seen it. A lot of people like it.
Is it
a Boston-y,
though? Is
no,
it?
It's
is
not
it Boston? Is it Boston?
Boston.
But all the Harvard Boston beforehand was, this is Johnny Depp back to acting. And so people... genuinely have an affection
it's
for Johnny Depp.
Yeah, they do. And it is nice to see Johnny Depp giving actually that
actually performing, yeah.
Is he acting, though?
He's
or is it
better
just
than he's been in a while.
But is
no,
it just mean is he not awful? Like De Niro in Silver Linings Playbook. He gets a nomination for not being terrible as opposed to being good.
First of all, he probably
I wouldn't
get
go so far as to say that he finds new depths. But I think
he's no Johnny on the spot.
Yeah, like
he found new bloody depths when he was with
the Lone Ranger.
Yeah,
okay.
It's,
mother of God.
You know, it's the best. Well, to say it's the best film he's been in a while, not hard. And he's okay. I mean, there is prosthetic work there, and it's actually a bit more excessive compared to what Whitey Bulger actually looked like.
That's right, though.
Yeah,
but he's okay. It's just the film itself as a whole is.
It feels
so
like another
sub
score.
Yeah, but Scott Cooper is one of the most overrated.
Yeah,
he is
MOR,
a capital M.
Yeah,
it's.
I have to have that acronym explained to me. That's middle of the road.
Middle of the road. Yeah. Yes, and I have seen so many middle of the road films this year that it is actually starting to annoy me. And
don't worry, when we get to our top tens, you're going to see a lot more of
them.
Hey!
I can't
wait. Let's move on.
Anyway, Sisters is at 5. So,
and it's also in our new releases this week.
Yes, because it is
weekend.
It's in the preview weekend.
Yeah. It's grand. It's solid. Tina Fey and Amy Poehler work well together. And it's great to see them make a film.
Shocking.
Yeah, I know. What a surprise. Who would have thought it?
I've heard really mixed things about it, I have to say.
Yeah, Oliver reviewed it for us on the site. He did not like it.
Okay.
He found a few laughs, and that's it.
Okay, I thought it was enjoyable, predictable, stable, good. It's much better than the other comedy that's opening this week.
But we'll get back
to that. But we'll get back to that later.
We're doing this all along. We're returning to a table of teases.
At 4, it's Snoopy and Charlie Brown, a Peanuts movie. Also,
which is awesome.
In a preview weekend.
God, this is
a
snow week.
I wonder why there's a preview weekend. Could it be that the
something
biggest
else
one of the year is out this week?
You should snoop into that, you know? Yeah. I wonder if it'll make Peanuts this weekend.
Oh.
Make it stop.
I'm actually, I'm very curious to see it in terms of like computer animation, as it looks like an interesting approach.
Surprisingly good reviews in America.
Yeah,
and well,
it's playing to the home crowd there.
Well, yeah, but I thought that kind of CGI animation might not have played at all.
But
that's
have you seen the style that they use? So they're sort of like 2D.
Yeah,
It's 2D, 3D.
It's heavily stylized. I'm really interested in seeing.
No,
what it looks
like.
I wouldn't mind seeing that myself, but I think that this is going to. However well this does, and I suspect it won't do near as well as it should because of a certain other film.
It's going to be buried. It's absolutely going to be buried.
Everything is going to be buried.
By the slumbering, awakening giant.
But there is just one underlying factor in its favour. Everybody likes peanuts.
And it's... the other film is 12A, and this.
Yeah, but this might have staying power in that regard.
It
might. Program
I've seen so many times before, animation just holds on in there.
10 weeks
in, like the
10 weeks of stuff.
20, if not top 10 films of the year, earnings wise.
It's not in the top 10, but it is in the top 20.
Home. Like, who saw Home?
I saw Home.
Nobody saw
Home.
Not in the cinema, but I saw
it. Yeah, okay.
I didn't see it.
Do you see it at home?
I did. It's okay.
Yeah, no, it's grand. Anyway. Atri, Christmas with the Coopers.
Oh,
Bradley
and the rest.
Yeah, it's not a great film. It does what it says.
Atu.
It's CBS, CBS Family Fair. It's, it's a Hallmark Christmas movie, except it got a theatrical release.
Yeah, okay. It's the holiday, too.
And a big name cast to boot.
Yeah, which is, yeah.
John
everybody
Goodman.
Likes everybody likes Diane Keaton is all that I can think of a thing. It's
but not
I do, but you know.
Touché, Jay.
Well. All I can say to this is, lad.
Yeah.
All I can say to this is, well, la di da, la di da.
Right. At two, Hunger Games, Mockingjay, Part Two.
And there's our Tushy again.
Yes
indeed. And he's in it
for like 30 seconds.
Yeah, it's nowhere near enough. Nowhere near enough. A lot of people. There's not enough Elizabeth Banks.
Everybody
nobody Harrelson.
Out, yeah.
I've seen the trailer, and there was a snippet of Philip Seymour Hoffman that made me sad again.
It's sad. Seeing Philip Seymour Hoffman in this film made me sad for two reasons.
Jarring, it's been a few years.
Yeah, but number one, yes, he is gone. I'm sorry, Jay, but it's
I know.
And secondly, in these films, and I think it's just the limits of the material and the way it's directed, but he's really underplays it. A lot of people are underplaying
Everybody
it.
Everybody does, yeah.
In
Julianne Moore is...
I don't think it was that much Philip Seymour Hoffman to play around with.
But in both films, like he's... And in the Catching Fire as well, he underplayed the role. Julianne Moore underplays hers. And then the rest of the returning cast, like Stanley Tucci, like Elizabeth Banks, like Woody Harrelson.
They're relegated to cameos.
They are relegated to cameos and exposition duty. It's just, there's not enough going on there for anyone.
It's the worst of the four.
Really?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Not,
oh,
not,
wow. Okay. No, the third one seems to be talked about that way. Okay.
Yeah.
But don't worry, there's going to be a slew of prequels that will... that's great. Apparently people are suggesting that the film's underperformance is due to its lack of an actual Hunger Games, which is great. It means the studio executive meetings about like turning a Hunger Games shared universe play out exactly like the conversations in the Hunger Games about creating Hunger Games.
Yeah. So they have become the game makers.
Create some hunger for these
games.
Yeah. Now you're just mocking SJ. Oh.
Yeah, sorry.
Mocking
SJ. Very good. Very good for that.
But yeah, I thought it had...
It was slavish to the book.
Very.
Well, it's extended out to two films. It's panned out to two films. Like, you'd be disappointed if it didn't work.
Yeah, the romance angle, that gets a lot of screen time.
And it's hard.
Neither of the two male leads are as good as
Lawrence. It has the Descent-esque feckin'
horror.
Yeah,
where did that come from?
Mother of God.
Yeah. Where? This is 12A, right? Where did that come from?
Deeply unsettling.
Yeah. And not in a good way.
Here's the thing, right? So here's my problem with The Hunger Games, is that it's not actually unsettling enough as a rule. I didn't mind the Descent-esque scenes, right? Because my problem with The Hunger Games is that it's a film about kids killing each other, but it's always ridiculously sanitized. To the point where, like, the first film features an 8-year-old who's impaled, but she doesn't have a lick of blood anywhere.
Yeah, but in order...
Because you can't.
Yeah. You need the 12A certificate. You can't
have you can push, like, you can do The Dark Knight or whatever on it. You can push it.
There can be peril.
It's violence within the context of the... kind of thing.
And, like, I mean, like, even in this one, there's a scene where, without spoiling anything, a character steps on a landmine.
And kabooey.
Like, if you close your eyes or go to the bathroom and come back in, you wouldn't be aware that anything had happened to him. It looks like he just fell down and fell asleep.
To be honest, I gave up after the second film because I really didn't think I was going to get enough out of these films at all. There's not enough meat to it.
Yeah.
There isn't enough in this film to sustain it. And there isn't enough in the last one. It's one film cloven quite poorly in half.
Yeah. I admire that it tried to say something relevant.
Yeah, I think it did a quite relevant. I think it did a quite film. Yeah, the first one I think is the best.
Oh, I did the second one.
Oh, I did the first one.
Yeah, I enjoyed the first one, and because it had the most to say, and this is just protracted.
And that's what I was saying. I didn't think the first one was particularly like it was fine, but it wasn't any more than that.
I enjoyed it.
Parents at home, show your kids Battle Royale. That's what we're getting at here.
Yeah, I'm fully agreeing with
you. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
At one, it's Pixar. With the good dinosaur.
But not as we know it.
But not, yeah. Which is it's this, technically a good title for the film in that it's better than the Disney film Dinosaur. But that's a very low bar to pass.
It's not better than the TV series Dinosaurs.
Oh, no, it's not at all. The Jim Henson one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
the mama. I remember that ending. That ending with them destroying the world, if I remember correctly. Yeah. Which is great for a kid watching TV. All the characters you loved over the past 3 years are dead. And everybody else.
I know a lot of shows that should end like that.
Yeah.
Roland Emmerich presents
Dinosaurs.
In which everybody died. No, in that case, I want Roland Emmerich's Big Bang Theory.
I
could do that. But yeah, the good dinosaur, very meh.
But yeah, from what I've heard, the plotting seems to be meh. But I've heard it's beautiful. I haven't seen it.
There's backgrounds, but cartoonish characters.
Yeah.
It's an interesting contrast. Like, the backgrounds are beautifully rendered to the point where you'd almost believe they were real at points. Yeah. But the actual creatures themselves are anthropomorphized and sort of they look like...
And a bit cartoony.
Yeah, they look plastic.
So hang on, they've got cartoony characters...
In an environment that looks real.
It's... Well, it sounds like Who Framed Roger Rabbit in reverse.
Except not, you know, not cool.
Except not as clever, yeah.
Yeah. Arlo is designed to sell toys.
Yeah,
that is his primary function.
Well, that's why you make a dinosaur movie. Yeah. Kids like dinosaurs, kids like cartoons. It's like Cars. It's pretty much like Pixar's Cars, but with animals that will be in Cars years later.
They made a movie about toys, so they were literally able to sell everything in that film.
Yeah. Ah, but the difference is those movies
are
great.
It's a lot better, yeah. It is brilliant. Good dinosaur is not great.
It's just a lack of ambition.
But it's just good.
Yeah, I wouldn't even go that far.
It's lower tier Pixar.
Yeah, it's better than the two Cars films. And we have to hesitate on that.
No, it is. I'm trying to think what else is better than in the Pixar canon.
It's probably about as good as Brave.
It's better than...
Please tell me it's better than Lava.
Everything's better than Lava.
You don't... I take it you don't Lava.
for your consideration.
Monsters U.
No, yeah, that's not very good. Monsters
I did that.
Really?
Yeah,
I did not. Did not care
about it. So is A Bug's Life.
Brave?
No,
that's what I'm saying. Brave is about.
That's what I'm saying.
Brave
are better.
They're better.
Brave
is in the area.
Brave is kind of meh. It should have been better than it was.
Yeah.
It should have been a lot
And that's the thing with the good dinosaur as well, because it had a trouble production history as well.
So it shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good enough.
What's next up for them?
What's next for them?
For Pixar?
They're doing one based around the Mexican Day of the Dead.
And they'll resurrect
the
Toy Story as well.
That could be...
Nemo 2 is next to put
on. Oh, yeah.
A Finding Dory.
Yeah. Of the original titles, there's the one...
I'm a huge Nemo fan, so I'll be there for that.
So that'll be the first time that DreamWorks did the film before they did, as opposed to at the same time. Yeah, The Book of Life.
Yeah. Dance all over again.
I like Ants.
I love Ants.
I prefer it.
I really want to see what happened with Newt. I would like to see, you know, the Pixar film that got cancelled.
Maybe someday.
On to the new releases. And we'll start with the one Darren is most excited to talk about. It is the Ron Howard movie. The new Ron Howard movie. It is In the Heart of the Sea.
Let's be clear about this. Ron Howard is a perfectly solid director who makes perfectly solid film. If you give him a good script, he will make a good film.
You can tell
we have evil. Just not evil enough.
I think you massively underrate the.
I think I rate it pretty accurately.
But in terms of the ability of not fucking it up, is a very delicate.
He's got a share of that too.
Yeah.
He's the insurance salesman that just about hits his figures. You know, he's solid. You can't fire the guy. But he just does
he
what
he gets the stainless steel toaster. He doesn't.
He never gets the steak knives.
He doesn't get the steak knives. He gets the toaster.
And he shall never get the steak knives.
If Jay has anything to do with this.
He won't get
The problem is the script. The problem with The Heart of the Sea is that it's basically like three different films. It's the origin story.
I only want one.
Yeah, I know. One of them would be quite good. It's the origin story of Moby Dick.
Moby Dick is not a superhero. He doesn't need an origin story.
There we go.
It is the journey that
inspired Melville.
Herman Melville, yeah.
But here's the thing. It luxuriates in that. So, like, you keep cutting back to Ben Whishaw as Herman Melville and Brendan Gleeson as a survivor of the disaster on the Essex.
I can't help but think that Brendan Gleeson should be playing
in that scenario,
I like Wishaw, but you know,
you're looking for the old man in the sea.
It might be a bit more heft than it anyway.
But yeah, so they're telling this story. They're telling the story of the disaster of the Essex, which was a ship that set out to whale, got waylaid, had a disaster.
Whalers on the moon. We are.
But so the problem is that it can't decide what it wants to be, right? So it wants to be a Moby Dick origin story, which is completely unnecessary. It exists purely to add prestige to the film and to get two more recognizable names on the poster. And it distracts from everything else going on. The much more interesting story is the story of survivorship, sort of people lost at sea after an accident during the whale.
Isn't this just Unbroken all over again, but with a whale?
No, it's better than Unbroken. It's lot better than Unbroken.
At least it's that.
Yeah, there's no Olympic medalists or homoerotic tension.
You say that like it's a bad thing.
Wait, it's a sailing film with no homoerotic tension.
It's all Chris Hemsworth and the whale, baby. But and then it gets sort of distracted. It hints at lots of things. So is it an environmental fable about man's arrogance meddling with the world? Or is it a class conflict between Chris Hemsworth's first mate and the captain who's assigned
to... Just don't ask
Ron
because he doesn't know. But
he doesn't care because the script is meant to tell him that.
That's his job.
No, I'm sorry. You can't blame everything on the script. A good director can get something out of an average script. An average director gets nothing out of anything because he's an average director. Sorry.
Hold on, didn't we just say there were two bad Kubrick films?
No. But we didn't just say that.
There are two less than...
That's fine. Okay. I'm not arguing that. A good director could... put it this way. If that same script, that In a Hard Sea script, right?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what the budget was. I imagine it was pretty
significant.
Right?
If you had
given that to a different director, the exact same script, and given that to Ron Howard, I can guarantee you, like, pick a director, a Scorsese, a
James Cameron.
You give me a terrible script.
Shoot the hell out of it.
You will get a better film, and that says everything.
A much more erratic film. Like, the hard
to see. I disagree. Okay. I think you get a better
erratic, film. But it might be more interesting.
Would be more interesting. I'll give you that. It'll be a more interesting failure.
Answer me this. Is it dull?
Yes.
Ah, there you go.
It's
an adventure movie on the seas. It cannot be dull.
How is that possible?
Exactly.
But Ron Howard found a way.
He does that.
Life finds a way, Jay.
If all else fails, just go watch Master Commander again.
Yes,
exactly. Watch Master Commander.
Yeah. That's why we never got any of the 20 sequels.
Yeah. No, I would advocate that.
Yeah. But let's move on.
Well, you could say its problem is a lack of heart.
Oh.
Don't go see it.
Right. Anyway,
I guess we know
it's not a whale of a time.
Right. Stop.
Okay.
It's Jigs of it, Moby.
Right. Yeah. I'm sorry to keep harpooning on about it.
Please stop. This is a wreck of a conversation.
the other big
release of the week is, of course, Sisters, which we talked about earlier. Then we have next week Snoopy and Charlie Brown, the Peanuts movie. And there's a Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg film.
Yes.
You wouldn't know it, would you?
Didn't mind the other guys.
No, the other guys.
The other guys. Not bad.
Yeah.
We don't know about this because they were in town, and everybody who was anybody who could even get within a whisper of them was boasting of the fact that the absolute lads were in town.
Guaranteed an extra star on your poster for your money back.
So the basic plot of the story is Will Ferrell is happily married to a woman who has, and his stepkids, so he has stepkids, and the father of those children comes back from prison?
No, he comes back from being abroad. The film is very, very generic and broad about everything.
Right, yes. Okay.
Including character.
With a title like Daddy's Home, I'm not expecting
death. Mark Wahlberg is the deadbeat dad who returns.
He's with the motorcycle
and all the rest, you know.
He's got long hair.
Will Ferrell is a generally straight laced.
Whenever he arrives, AC/DC, he has his own ambient AC/DC soundtrack. That's how hardcore this film is.
He's not Iron Man.
Or
is he?
Philip? Yeah, or is he? He makes mean cinnamon buns. He can skateboard. He rides a motorbike. He's cool dad.
Yeah,
Will Ferrell is creepy dad. Will Ferrell is very creepy dad. The problem with the film is that it pitches Ferrell as the straight arrow to Wahlberg's character, but also makes him insanely creepy and predatory to the point where it seems like he married his wife not because he loved her, but because she happened to have two kids to whom he could become a stepdad. The film latches onto that and never lets go.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
it's from the director of That's My Boy and Horrible Bosses 2.
And that because you were excited about this, Jay.
Yeah, I was really
hyped
really
up.
It up there. Like.
Yeah, but yeah, that's the level of sort of tone deafness that we're talking about here.
Oh, and the wife is played by Linda Cardellini,
who is massively wasted.
Of course she is. She
should be the protagonist of the film in terms of the way the film's structured, but she's not because the film has no idea what it's doing.
No, because it's a boys' club film. It's fairly
haven't Robert we seen a billion of these? Oh God, I'm so tired of them. Can we just move on?
Anyway,
moving on. Moving on to the biggest film of the year.
What?
Star Wars.
Never heard of it.
It's
a little indie film. It's an indie film. It's about
It's an Icelandic melodrama about
a
farmer who's lost his sheep.
I'm so there.
It's about post conflict reconstruction. About soldiers and collective guilt.
Yeah, it's
moral
about
responsibility.
Colonialism. And
post-colonialism.
It's about a young warrior who's found on a sand planet and finds out they're part of something bigger. It's Star Wars all over again, isn't it?
It's not a young warrior, it's a young scavenger, but yes.
Yes,
it's
you know what I mean. You are exactly right. It's very, very nostalgic.
Which is
its strength and its weakness.
Very nostalgic. This is kryptonite to me.
This is like Jurassic World if Jurassic World were made well.
Don't mention that film's name in my presence.
Like, this is the film that Jurassic World wants to be. It's like
it remembers your childhood,
but it remembers what works about your childhood.
Here's everything you loved about Star Wars, and here's it brought to the 21st century.
How do you get a 5-star review from that?
Yes.
That just sounds like fan fiction, essentially, for like good, well-written.
But the thing is, while you're watching it, you are reliving every feeling that you had when watching.
Jay and I have already specified this is not part of our childhood. So what's in it for us?
Okay, here we go.
No pressure.
No pressure at all. Okay, an exploration of nostalgia. The idea of coming home.
Can we take nostalgia over? It does.
You can't take nostalgia out of it.
Why can't you?
Because
it is built on the 6 that went before, especially on
it's
the,
no, it's built
the
on
original
the 3.
It really.
There's something very passive aggressive about how it relates to the prequels in terms of the New Republic appears for precisely one scene, and that one scene is a shot off its bow, so to speak.
Yeah.
And it also there's a point where they're talking about the infamous stormtrooper who happens to be black, which caused a lot of controversy online.
What?
Because God... Yeah.
But the outfits are white!
But
it turns out that there's two sets of stormtroopers. And I mean, this is...
Please tell me black ones, because I can't tell you that's the
racial commentary.
There's the ones that are taken as children and indoctrinated into the military. And then there's the clones.
But the point is basically the film goes out of its way to diminish or belittle the fact that the entire prequel trilogy spent two films explaining that stormtroopers are all clones.
Yeah.
And it's just a wonderfully passive-aggressive swipe at it. The film is very much, this is what you liked about the original trilogy. Enjoy it.
The original question is, what's in it for those of us who don't care for that?
The three new performers. John Boyega.
Well, I'd say the four.
You would include Adam Driver in there.
He's getting it from what I read.
What? Andrew Driver's not getting it, is he?
No, I read a few.
I had him as a weak point, but some of the people, Devin Farachi claims that he's
weak. Don't mention that word.
Just go with it.
Jesus, smile.
But then, the three heroic leads, generally speaking, all right?
Oscar Isaac.
This is a film. A Star Wars film without a white male lead. It's three leads. Are a white woman, a black man, and a Guatemalan Cuban American, which is remarkable for a Star Wars film.
And he's such a swaggering, cocksure person.
Also, I like him. He's great screen.
I never saw that before in a Star Wars movie.
No,
he does echo Han Solo.
All three of them echo Solo.
Everything's an echo. I don't want an echo. I want an original sound.
Okay,
please.
Boyega's Finn. the stormtrooper, right? He is perhaps, I would argue, the most interesting part of the film. In a film series that's based around the idea of embracing destiny, right? The hero's journey, Cambellian, all that crap, right? Finn is a stormtrooper who decides to reject his destiny. It's a rejection of many of the conventional Cambellian undertones of the original trilogy, yes, to the point where there is no Aryan blonde-haired, blue-eyed farm boy. Instead, you have a bunch of very diverse, very interesting characters who exist outside the templates of the original trilogy. That is what I would argue. That is the most innovative part of it.
It takes the engine
of the original trilogy, and it finds interesting and playful things to do within that.
It takes a very good recipe,
yeah,
and it remixes it, yeah, to produce another brilliant dish.
Yeah, Finn is a hero for the post-Snowden age, right? He's a soldier who decides that he doesn't want to kill. He rejects his destiny. His character arc is a heroic, fundamental rejection of the life that he was born to, which makes him a 21st century Campbell.
Yeah,
he's a
liberal.
That alone.
A liberal hero is quite rare. You know?
But inside the structures, it's a very conventional, very stable, very safe franchise. And I would argue that is what makes it worthwhile.
That's not enough going forward, though, is it? I mean, that's a play setting. There's got to be more to that.
Oh, yeah, there's
more. See, it's like Ryan more Johnson as in something.
This is the thing.
Ryan Johnson is a fine director.
He is.
And I think you picked interesting directors so far.
Well, two of them. Well, yeah. They had JJ, yeah, they have Ryan, and but then Colin Trevorrow.
Abrams, yeah, like, opening with Abrams true. Is a smart bet, because, like...
Yeah. He's the where you need to be.
The primary purpose of The Force Awakens is to make you forget the prequel trilogy existed.
Job done.
Yeah. Hasn't everybody already done that?
We tried.
Relatively speaking. Even Star Wars fans hate them, don't they?
Yeah.
Really?
So you have to... But you have to convince them to invest in this. That's what this
you
is.
Do.
Yeah.
Don't
have
they? Take
no,
every
you do.
Penny.
You do have to win them back.
How much money did the prequels make?
Yeah,
a lot.
You can throw anything with the Star Wars word and people don't see it.
Yeah.
And they're not after prestige here because.
But you
want to don't like them, don't like them.
They'll see them, but they'll
hate
them.
And the thing
them.
Is, we should stress, Jay and I. Well, okay, I'll speak for myself.
Okay.
I don't hate Star Wars.
I don't either.
It just doesn't.
It's fine.
When did Star Wars mean something to everybody? I don't get this.
I made a joke the other day on Twitter. You know the way you say, there was a thing saying George Lucas likes the new Star Wars article, right?
James Cameron
said he liked both. Yeah, I didn't like that.
James Cameron said he liked Terminator Genesis.
I tweeted the article saying I wouldn't have showed it to him. I'd have made him wait and queue up and pay like everybody else, right? Simple kind of dopey joke,
yeah,
made myself laugh, gave myself a giggle and moved on.
Yeah.
Somebody tweeted me later on, really? Why would you do that?
Yeah.
It would be.
You have to have more respect for George Lucas. I'm not even getting engaged. Like, how can you engage at that level? Because the people, like, surely if you're a real true Star Wars fan, you'd be strangling George Lucas at this point.
I would argue that not wanting to strangle George Lucas is a good thing because it means you've got distance from the films. Like, wanting to strangle George
true.
Lucas.
True. I know.
Is
the best thing you ever did is get rid of him away from the thing, period.
Yeah. But this is like we were saying earlier when we were talking about the response to critics. Anybody who doesn't like these getting this death threat.
This is Nolan fanboys on an entirely different level.
Yeah,
it
is. You have no idea.
This is what puts me off things like this.
This is Nolan fanboys fermenting for 30 years.
Yeah. This is what puts me off this, though. This is what puts me off this whole franchise, if you want.
And that is why I would say it's a good idea to embrace a franchise, particularly like when it does have a conservative fan base whose reaction to like a black stormtrooper was to get crazy and racist, is to say, actually,
I agree.
This is something good, and this is something that we like, and this is the way to go forward.
I will see it. I'll probably see it after Christmas. Between Christmas and New Year, everything else going on, I'm like catching early.
Yeah, I was probably watching as well.
The thing, Furiosa aside, Rey is the best female protagonist on the screen.
And that's not a bad thing. That's definitely good.
We've had a phenomenal year for female leads, particularly in action films. I mean, I would have found Rebecca Ferguson as a co-lead
in
Mission Impossible. Great.
And of course, Jennifer Lawrence is in Hunger Games. But
That's a fair point. It's all good.
And here's the thing. I love. It's beautifully ironic, right? Disney had to buy Star Wars before you could have a female protagonist who wasn't a queen or a princess.
If she's revealed to be a princess,
I know. We'll go back and edit the podcast.
I have to find a way to end that discussion.
I loved Star Wars. My review is the official Star Wars one, and Darren equally is a huge fan. So
he's written a book. He's written 90,000 words. 4,000
word opus is available on his own site. Yes.
Go see it at some point. I can't promise I'll love or hate it.
Myself and Philip will come back and rant.
I may have seen it twice more by the next time we talk. Possibly
May.
More.
Possibly.
No, May.
Well, it's the Mooney family Christmas cinema trip.
Ah, good enough. Good enough.
So not. Quick, give me the name of something prestigious.
Sisters.
Sisters. Yeah, like that time we went to go see Brokeback Mountain. That was the fun family.
Oh, you told me about that. Yeah. That sounded like fun.
We went to see The Impossible.
I would love to say The Impossible. One day we'll do a podcast that's The Impossible.
We'll be on your own, Impossible,
will we? We will leave that one there for now.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers. Bye.